Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, entitled The Status Quo. Chapter 19, entitled The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha. Text 28. I may read 29 as well, which has no purport, but doesn't steal from the thunder from the person who gives from text 30 tomorrow. Please repeat. Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho. Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Tasyaisha dhaitya dhaitya rishapa padarhatu.
Tasyaisha dhaitya rishapa padarhatu.
Mukham pabhasyam sthanam ut sajha sasarjaha. Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho.
Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Tasyaisha daitya rishabha padahato.
Tasyaisha daitya rishabha padahato.
Mukham papashyam sthanam utsasarjaha. Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho.
Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mamukshaya.
Tasyaisha daitya arishabha padahato.
Tasyaisha daitya arishabha padahato.
Mukham papashyam sthanam utsasarjaha.
Mukham papashyam sthanam
yogina yoga samadhi naraho.
Dhyayanti lingara sato mukshaya.
Tasyaisha daitya rishabha padahato.
Mukham
prapashyam sthanam utsasarjaha.
Thank you.
word for word, please repeat. Yam
Hun
Yoginaha
Yoginaha
the yogis.
Yoga
Samadhina
in mystic trance.
Raha
in seclusion.
Dhyayanti
Yanti.
Meditate upon.
Linga
from the body.
Asataha.
Unreal.
Mamukshaya.
Seeking freedom.
Tasya
of him.
Eshaha.
This.
Doitya.
Son of Diti.
Rishabha.
The crest jewel.
Pada.
By a foot.
Ahataha.
Struck.
Mukam.
Countenance.
Papashyam.
Excuse me.
Prapashyam,
while gazing on,
Tanum,
the body,
Utsasaja,
he cast off.
Ha,
indeed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Brahma continued, he was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis, seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies, meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, this crest jewel of Diti's sons has cast off his mortal coil. It's interesting, in text 25, the word karina, karnamulehan, is used, where actually the Lord was, he struck Hiranyaksha at the root of his ear with his hand. Kara means hand. But now we're hearing struck with his foot. May sound like a contradiction. Hand, foot, which one did he hit? Well, you know, combat fighting these days, isn't it? And kickboxing, you can use both your hands and your feet to strike your opponent. And as we hear Krishna wrestling with Chanura, hand to hand, leg to leg, chest to chest, face to face with the Lord. But so hand and feet, which one? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that because the boar has four legs, the front two legs are the same as hands, so there's no contradiction. Purport. The process of yoga is very clearly described in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said here that the ultimate end of the yogis and mystics who perform meditation is to get rid of this material body. Therefore, they meditate in secluded places to attain yogic trance. Yoga has to be performed in a secluded place, not in public or in demonstration on stage, as nowadays practiced by so many so-called yogis. Real yoga aims at ridding one of the material body. Yoga practice is not intended to keep the body fit and young. Such advertisements of so-called yoga are not approved by any standard method. Particularly mentioned in this verse is the word yam, or unto whom, indicating that meditation should be targeted on the personality of Godhead. Even if one concentrates his mind on the boar form of the Lord, that is also yoga. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, one who concentrates his mind constantly in meditation upon the personality of Godhead, in one of his many varieties of forms, is the first class yogi, and he can very easily attain trance simply by meditating upon the form of the Lord. If one is able to continue such meditation on the Lord's form at the time of one's death, one is liberated from this mortal body and is transferred to the kingdom of God. This opportunity was given to the demon by the Lord, and therefore Brahma and other demigods were astonished. In other words, the perfection of yoga practice can be attained by a demon also if he is simply kicked by the Lord. So the next verse, The translation reads, these two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions. Om again to Brandisya Ganajana Shalakya. Chakshunam Melitam Jaina Atasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Mukham Kuroti Vatilam Pongam Mangai Tegini Yakipata Mahambande Shri Guru Dinatalala. So both verses again. Brahma continued, he was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis, seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies, meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, this crest jewel of Didi's sons has cast off his mortal coil. These two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions. So, the essential topic here is the meditation on Krishna, ultimately, and that's what all, as we're hearing in Bhagavad Gita, what the jnana, karma, and yogic paths all aim for, is ultimately full Krishna conscious meditation on our relationship with Krishna. So that all the paths should point towards. If one is very much into knowledge, gaining knowledge, or if one is into bending and stretching, the yogic path, or if one's into utilizing their time and their efforts and their energies in gaining material acquisition, then if those paths in of themselves, if don't have any tinges of Krishna bhakti, then the result is just material and temporary. Today we'll talk a little bit about some famous examples of personalities who have developed their meditation, developed their strength of meditation on Krishna, and of course the result in the end that they obtained. Firstly, as we were hearing yesterday, in a material situation, in the people that we're dealing with, the people that we're preaching to, people that we're trying to give Krishna consciousness to, their meditations are purely material. We understand the difference in quality of matter and spirit. The absolute truth covered by Maya is matter, Prabhupada explains in a purport in the Bhagavad Gita. But then that matter, dovetailed in the service of Krishna, regains its spiritual identity, regains its spiritual qualities. So we see a materialist, a material practitioner, we see that their whole meditation, because as you know, thinking, feeling and willing, the psychic divisions, thinking, feeling and willing, which actualizes in action, gives one a material result, which, as we heard yesterday also, perpetuates one's existence in the material world. But then what we're giving them is a process to dovetail that meditation, dovetail those activities, so that they gain a spiritual goal. You see their meditations, and you see how their bodies are manifesting the results of their activities. See those that are deeply rooted, deeply riveted in the bodily concept of life. You see their activities are giving them nothing but suffering. You see how people, when they when they perform sinful activities, drinking, drugs, illicit sex, you see how those activities, how they ravage their body. Not only is their body being ravaged by time, but the sinful activities that they're performing, their faces turn demoniac. I was seeing this pictures of this of these people that were throughout time taken, like I think once every year for about 7 or 8 years, and how their faces changed from performing, taking so much drugs and intoxication, how their faces gradually changed into very very demoniac, very ugly. And that's not a judgment, that's just an observation. And it really gives you an appreciation of like how much work we have to do to help redirect their meditations. But they're meditating on sense gratification, which originally, as you know, the living entity's meditation on sense gratification is a sense gratification for Krishna. That's originally the living entity's meditation. How can I please the Lord's senses? Of course, there's so many bodies, through so many millenniums, through so much sojourning through the material ocean of existence, that the living entity forgets this. But we're seeing face to face the ravaging effects of time, but the results of their material activities in their faces. As Prabhupada says, the face is the index of the mind. So these people's faces were changing. They were beautiful, bright, and innocent to begin with. That's the first picture. And slowly, as they got older, they started, you know, indulging in sense gratification of some kind or another, generally drugs. Because the psychology of people today is that they're suffering so much in the material world that there's this escapist psychology, that they want to free themselves from this, from the pressures of social implications, from family expectations, relationship expectations, financial problems that continue, paying mortgages, living life, making ends meet, all these pressures on their shoulders. They want to escape, isn't it? That's why they go to the pub on Friday nights, and all the brain cells that they gain that week by working and engaging in some type of yajna, all those brain cells that they gain, they lose by, you know, isn't it? They kill by taking drugs and alcohol on the Friday night. And the weekend is, you know, a whole lot of hookups, their social affairs, and then by Monday they're in a stupor of, you know, of being pushed around by the three modes of material nature. So yes, as these pictures progress throughout the years, the faces of these people change. As we understand the technical side of that. Dehino shminyata dehe kumaram yo varamjara. That from boyhood to youth to old age, the body is changing. That this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, or from girlhood to youth to old age, we're politically correct here, either male or female body, still no one is exempt, as we're hearing yesterday. Nobody is exempt from the fact that death will knock on your door. That technically the body is changing every 7 years, Jayapataka Maharaj says. That I was talking to a vacuum cleaner salesman, thinking, where's Kayla Tita going with this? Why is he talking about vacuum cleaner salesman? We're just talking about philosophy now, he's talking about. I was showing him the Bhagavad Gita. I met him in a place in New Zealand, Tauranga, and I was showing him the picture of the changing bodies. And he was very interested in that, and he saying, where, you know, the soul continues, but the body changes every, you know, every 7 years or so. And he said, yeah, that's interesting. We as vacuum cleaner salesmen, we study dust. And that dust, 75% of dust in your home is your skin. The other 25% are dust mites and their excretions. Sorry to talk about this before breakfast. But that's what dust is basically made up of your skin and dust mites and their excretions. And that there's a finer white dust that you find in your home. There's a finer white dust that you find around your bedding. And if you inhale that again, because that's your skin, it's a finer form of your skin. And when you sleep, that's when your body depletes skin and repletes skin. In other words, you know, the transforming of your body is taking place a lot of the time while you sleep. But we lose about 500 million skin cells a day, he says. He gave some technical information. Like I say, they study dust. Because they have to give all information when they're selling vacuums, isn't it? And this is what's in your carpet, and it's you. And you know, you've got to clean it, and our vacuums will do the best. And you know, this is how they sell their vacuum cleaners. So they understand the science of dust, which is relevant to what we're talking about. So he continued, he said that 500 million skin cells a day we lose. And 500 million skin cells we gain. So we're always repleting and depleting skin. So 75% of dust in your home is your skin. And every 7 years, your body completely changes. Your body has a complete rehaul. Your skin, your... And so I was showing him this picture, and he said, yeah, so I can understand that every 7 years, your body completely changes. And of course, we understand by going by this verse, Dehino Shminyata Dehe. Deha and Dehino. Deha means body, and Dehino means one who possesses the body. So there's two. There's the body and there's you. And we were hearing this yesterday, that we're not this body. The body dies. But he understood by this picture that yes, that every 7 years our body completely changes. So you can ask people, you can point to the 5-year-old, where's your 5-year-old body gone? Or what, you're 27 now, so you've been through about 3, almost 4 bodies. 28 divided by 7 is 4, right? So you've been through 4 bodies, complete changes. But where did your 5-year-old body go? Where is it now? So this is to get to the point that they understand that they're not the body, but the soul. They're the driver in the car, not the car. So I say, by using his logic and by his understanding of what dust is, so I say to people, I say, so where did your 5-year-old body go? And I say, well, if 75% of dust is your skin and you change every 7 years, then your mother vacuumed you up, didn't she? And then they have to admit, well, yeah, that's where my going by that logic. And so one of the ways to preach just the basic principle of Bhagavad Gita, which may take years for people to understand. I personally admit I still think I'm the body. Where's my meditation? Which we'll discuss further in this class. But so to give people a basic idea, we're not this body, then you can give them technical information like that, that they have to accept. They have to accept at least material logic to take steps spiritually. But where's their meditation? What are they meditating on? Generally, they're meditating on the opposite sex, male and female. Generally, that's where the meditation is. If not, animals, generally, most of the time. If they're meditating on humans, they're meditating on a role model, which is someone who they can attain their position or be like. As you know, isn't it fashion these days based on role model, isn't it? Like looking like the supermodels. For ladies, for men, it's looking like, you know, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and, you know, developing the body and, you know, sculpting the muscles. And so these meditations of what they try to become like. When people, of course, they need, as you know, everyone is a social creature. No one is exempt from wanting to have company. And no man is an island. the famous saying goes, that we always want company. And so if people become reclusive enough to not want the association of other humans, generally they look to animals, isn't it? Oh, people get cats and dogs and, you know what I mean, isn't it? Like Prabhupada said, they're serving dog now. They're serving D-O-G, dog, instead of G-O-D, God. That propensity to serve has been transformed into serving the pet. So they're meditating on animals. So again, like we're saying, that where's it, the thinking, feeling and willing, their meditation on animals, they're taking on animal bodies. Even before they lose this body, they're already molding a body to take in the next life. Because Prabhupada explains in the seventh canto that actually when one dies, there, before taking on the next body, there's a period of time where in the hellish planets, unfortunately, that their subtle body is molded so that they can take on their next animal body. Their consciousness and their subtle body is molded so that they can, so they're fit for the next body. But in Kali Yuga these days, meditation is so degraded that and their actions and their activities are so sinful that they're taking on animal bodies. I was going door to door in Christchurch in New Zealand, and I knocked on the door, and while I was waiting for them to come, this dog was barking behind the fence at me. I could see through the fence, it was just a wire fence. And he was a big, I don't know if you know those kind of dogs, like the snow dogs, the huskies. And they're quite furry, and they're grey, they've got grey fur, and they're whitish, beautiful dogs. But and this one had like quite dark circles around his eyes, and he had a big mouth, and he was barking at me. And I was looking at his face, you know, pointy ears. And I was looking at his face, and I was thinking, wow, this is a mean dog. And he was really, like, really, you know, if that fence wasn't there, I would have been eaten, no doubt. And that's generally what guard dogs do. But he was really going for it. He was really barking. And then I was looking at his face, and then the door opened, and the person who of the house was standing there. And so I looked from the dog to the face of the man, and his face was exactly like the dog's. Dark circles, he had hairy beard, and, you know. He actually turned out to be a nice guy, but it was quite striking about how much he looked like his dog. There's even a competition they have for how much you can look like your pet. They have, you know, they have the comparison pictures of the owner and the pet. You know, people with long blonde hairstyles with curls on the end, and they, you know, next to their picture of their poodle, how they look like their pet. People's meditations, taking on the form of animals. And understanding the technical dehino sminyata dehe, that your body is this malleable machine that is able, that's affected by the environment, affected by your association, affected by your thoughts, feelings, and words, and changeable, malleable. Our mission is to change that meditation. Our mission is to get people to think about their situation and to have a spiritual goal and to direct them on a spiritual path whilst maintaining their material situation and their material body, but dovetailing that in ultimately in Krishna's service. So meditations of the great personalities that we take example of. Let's talk about Judd Barrett. You're going to hear that in the fourth canto. King Bharat, as you know, he's a great personality. He was a devotional king, Raja Rishi. And he was running the kingdom. But come time to renounce everything, he, as you know, he went to the forest. And he took shelter of Pulaha Rishi at Pulaha Ashram. That was his guru. And of course, he's performing austerities, and he's meditating by the river, and he sees a deer. Everyone knows the story. There's some interesting details and insights and instructions in this story, which will illustrate our meditative process. And as you know, the deer comes to the river to drink. And then a lion roars from the forest, which scares the deer. She jumps across the river. But at that time, because the roar is so loud and she's so scared, she has a miscarriage. And so Maharaj Bharat, he sees this and then he takes compassion on the deer. And as you know, the mother deer runs off and dies in a cave. And so Maharaj understands this. And so the deer is helpless. And then it's floating down the river and he can't help it, but you know. Take the deer and take care of it. So as we know the story, he becomes so absorbed in taking care of this deer that he neglects his willfully, Prabhupada says, in two or three places. Actually says in the verses also. He says two or three places in the purports in this chapter that he willfully neglected his sadhana. And so he's trying to perform his duties, his duties as a renunciant. He's trying to perform his sadhana, but the deer keeps with its soft little horns and, you know, it's always, you know, pushing against him and, you know, and he has affection for the deer. He treats it like his own son and so on and so forth. And he even names the deer. The deer's name was Prince. Not the famous musician, but Prince, the deer. And so he's fondling the deer and his meditation is distracted. And as we hear from the previous acharyas and Srila Prabhupada also, that his level of meditation, his level of Krishna conscious activity, he's on the platform of bhava. There's different levels of bhava also. Bhava literally means a mood. And that mood of devotion to the Supreme Lord was one of, like, he's very dutiful. That's why he's a great king. But bhava also means liberation. But there's different levels of liberation. Anyway, that's the point. That bhava, there's different levels. So he was on a certain stage of bhava. And he willfully neglected his sadhana. And then, as you know, when come time to leave his body, he was calling out for the deer, which is like Arjuna. Arjuna was calling out for his son, Narayan. And then, because he's meditating on the deer, that meditation is so powerful that he takes on the body of a deer. But in the body of the deer, he, as you know, he's very intelligent as a body of deer. He has the consciousness of Bharat Maharaj. And but in the body of a deer, then he goes back to Pulaha Ashram and he just eats roots and leaves and just fully focuses and stays at the ashram. He renounces his family in that life also. And then, as you know, then he takes birth as Judd Bharat. So Maharaj's four main mistakes were, firstly, that he, and this is instructive, was that he was a king, which is, he's a Raja. And the duty of a king is to take care of the Praja, the inhabitants of the kingdom. But that's as a king. But since taking up the renounced life, then that's not his duty anymore. So he took care of the deer, but that wasn't his duty. He could have consulted his spiritual master, and he could have just gotten the deer to maybe given it to another family, or, you know, someone, just sort of relayed it so that it could be, you know, given some shelter by someone else, and then he could have got on with his practice. But no, he continued to take care of the deer. The second mistake was that how Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that Bhaktaram yagitapasam savaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam. That's the point there. Gyatvamam shantim richati. That he's the friend of all living entities. He's the greatest friend, the greatest protector and shelter of all living entities. Bharat Maharaj was in that meditation. It's by me and by my shelter that this deer is able to live. That's a mistake. That carries on from that still in the consciousness of a king. Third mistake was, as we already mentioned, that he willfully neglected his sadhana. We may out of, when we're practicing sadhana, we may out of condition, habit, we may forget to chant our 16 rounds. We may forget to follow the four regular principles. We may find some difficulty in our practice because of previous conditioning. And so there's some concession there, and that may be overlooked by Krishna. But for someone who is conscious, and for someone on the level of his maturity in devotional service, to willfully neglect one's sadhana, then that is a grave mistake. And the fourth mistake was that he didn't consult his spiritual master, which Prabhupada says a couple of chapters later in the fourth canto, explaining how he mentions that in the purport, that he didn't consult his spiritual master, who was Pulaha Rishi. That's interesting. The previous acharyas explain his karmic situation, because there's many questions that arise to do with Jad Bharat or Maharaj Bharat's situation, about why is he subject to karma if he's transcendental to that? Because we hear in Bhagavad Gita that the bhakti yogi is transcendental to the three modes of material nature, isn't it? Man cha yo cha vyapachaya charena bhakti yoga sevate. Sagunan samatichaitan. So he's transcendental to the three modes of material nature. And so why is he being affected like this? Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Maharaj Bharat's situation was very interesting because his Parabdha karma, his manifest karma, because there's a cycle, as we know, when we leave the spiritual world, we're covered by avidya, ignorance. And then we go around in the cycle where we perform papa or pious, sinful or pious activities. We get results of those, which are a parabdha and aparabdha, manifest and unmanifest reactions to those activities. And then there's the kuta. Then there's the tendency to continue doing those activities, because the soul is always active. It has to act. It never remains stale or inert or static. Was that the word you said? Or static? Idle. Thank you. It's always active. So that good or bad activities, the reactions to those, and the manifest and unmanifest reactions, which is prabdha and aprabdha, and then the kuta, the tendency to continue doing activities, that's what keeps one going in the cycle of birth and death. So his prabdha karma, his manifest reactions, was interestingly enough that Parabdha Karma manifested the deer and prompted him, manifested his propensity to take care of the deer. That was the material side of the Parabdha Karma. The spiritual side of the Parabdha Karma was that Krishna allowed him to be conscious in his body of a deer, when he took the body of a deer, allowed him to be conscious like a human. So his Parabdha Karma worked both ways. And so his meditation as a deer was, let me renounce everything. Let me go back to the ashram of my spiritual master and let me get it right. Let me develop this meditation. So he was at the ashram and he didn't get distracted by anything. And then, as you know, in the body of Jad Bharat, what did he do? He acted like a dullard. His father was trying to teach him the Gayatri Mantra, trying to teach him how to wash his hands, how to properly perform pollutions. He'd teach him how to... He was doing everything the opposite. He didn't want to be understood. He didn't want to be recognized as a great personality, because that would distract him again. So he acted as a dullard. Like his father would say, you know, you you wash your hands, you cleanse, you bathe, and then you perform your rituals, you perform your Gayatri Mantra. So what would he do? He'd perform his Gayatri Mantra, get the mantras wrong. He knew them. He knew all of this. And he'd get them wrong, and then he'd wash his hands afterwards. He'd do everything the opposite to what his father was teaching. But and as you know how the story goes, he was treated badly by the public, and of course most of his family. His father loved him. His father was a devotee, and his father could understand. But he was treated improperly, and then, as you know, he was taken by dacoits as a willing sacrifice to put in front of Goddess Kali. And as you know, they're just about to chop his head off, and then she bursts out of the stone, and she protects because she understands he's a pure devotee of Krishna. She protects him. But anyway, point is that his meditation, as Maharaj Bharat, got him into the situation of being in a deer's body. Then his meditation as a deer got him the body of Judd Bharat. And then his faking it until he was making it, basically hiding from society, is Judd Bharat. And then, as you hear, he goes back to Godhead after that. Interesting instructions there about our process of meditation and our goal of our meditation. And there's so many more examples. Narad Muni talks in the 7th canto of great personalities and their meditations on Krishna. He talks about how they all obtained liberation. Great personalities, both demoniac. Going by this last point here, Prabhupada says that, in other words, the perfection of yoga practice can be obtained by a demon also if he's simply kicked by the Lord. That the Lord is so kind and merciful, he even gives liberation to demons. But the reason why I read this second translation today is also to remember that they are who these personalities are. Who is Hiranyaksha? He's one of the Jayavijay twins, right? So we understand that their goal is set. We understand that they're going back to Krishna anyway. But still, that doesn't undermine the fact that Krishna is all merciful and all kind, even though the demons' meditations may be offensive. So Narad Muni, back to what Narad Muni says in the 7th canto, 1st chapter, texts 30 through 31, he says that great personalities, either pious or impious, their strong meditations on Krishna got them the same result. And the five types of meditation, the five types of bhava, the five types of concentration that were exhibited was fear, envy, affection, hatred, and bhakti. And then Narad Muni gives five examples, very famous examples of those. The first one, he says that the gopis represent, they're the greatest in the lusty affairs, their meditation on Krishna in Madhurya Ras. They obtain Krishna because of their lust. But that's actually real love, but for the verse's sake, he says that. Then fear, Kamsa Bhayo, he says that Kamsa was the most famous in terms of like his meditation on Krishna in fear. He was, as you know, before the night before he was killed, he knew that Krishna, his angel of death, had arrived in Mathura. He heard the bow break, and he had so much commotion, and so many elephant Kuvalyapi had been killed, and so many things had gone on, and he'd heard about it, and he said, yes, my death is near. My formidable angel of death has arrived. So Narad Muni gives Kamsa as a great example of fear. Envy, he gives the example of Shishupal and the kings. affection and family affection. He gives the Yadus and the Pandavas. And then Narad Muni gives himself as an example of bhakti. Now these five types of meditation all attained Krishna. And then Narad Muni goes on to say that actually even there are personalities in the history who didn't have any of these five types of meditations. And a famous example of that was King Vaina. He didn't attain salvation, he says in the next verse, because he had none of these. King Vaina wasn't yet completely unconscious of Krishna. So our meditations. And and Krishna is so kind even to demons. Another example of that is, we'll go to Ram Lila. What time do I have to finish, by the way? What's the cutoff point? Sorry? Oh, it is. Sorry, I've gone over time. Well, I won't go into that pastime then. So I thought it was closer to 9 o'clock that we could finish. But I'll stop there. Ask for any questions, comments, realizations. Yes, but. Give an example in a devotee's life. Yes. Mother Ermila gives an example of she knows Prabhupada disciples who have taken sannyas and who have left their family and their. Well, this particular sannyas, he went through vanaprastha and then with the wife and then took sannyas. And the sannyasi is still friends with the wife. And there's different levels of taking sannyas, as you know. Bahudak. I can't remember all four of them. The last one is Pravigayagacharya, one who travels around the world, right? But once someone takes sannyas, then they traditionally live just outside the village in a thatched hut and beginning to practice to perform austerities and so on and so forth. But the family can bring them food weekly, right? And then the second stage is you move further into the forest and less contact. And then the third stage is less and less contact. And then the fourth, Pravigayagacharya, is traveling all over the world. Well, in Narad Muni's case, all over the universe, or the spiritual material worlds. But point that she's making, which is an example of the first mistake, is that, one's taking a particular ashram, but then still dealing with the intricacies of the previous ashram. Then, does that answer your question? Any other questions, comments? Yes, ma'am. Siddhapada, Hare Krishna.
Did you give an example of hatred in those five
times of meditation? Yeah, that coupled with envy, like Shishupala. Well, Prabhupada says in a few places he hated and envied Krishna. So, yeah, that was. Go on. Would you say that losing one's lustre and brightness losing the propensity to perform pious activities. Well, you're talking more physically. Like Prabhupada gives some examples in different places of those that if they, even being on that platform, they may, if they perform, if they do, if there's some type of even subtle diversion from their path, then there's the results of that physically. They lose some fame. Yeah, their luster, their bodily luster diminishes. That could be part of the physical appearance of someone who may not follow the dharmically follow the path that they're on. What are you gonna add to that? Right. Well, yeah, the Pravati Marg and Nivriti Marg, right, the path of full renunciation, Nivriti Marg, as opposed to Pravati Marg. Pravati Marg, they can still perform sense gratification, but under the rules and regulations of scripture, and they're safe in that way. Well, like the Grihastha Ashram is, you know, isn't it? It's concession and, a license to, you know, have sense gratification and interact physically. But you're following the rules, isn't it? And when you're following the rules like you do, following the governmental rules, when you see the police, you're not so, you know, if you're a law-abiding citizen, then you're not so, by seeing the police, you're not afraid. But those who are performing, you know, sinful, if they're against the government, you know, they're not following the rules of the government, then when they see the police, that's a little off the track. But Pravati Marg means basically that you're following rules, and you have license to perform sense gratification. If that's a little more for you. Would you like to add to that? Any other questions, comments on this question? Yes, Mata.
And then the consequence of mode of passion, you get born again. Mode of goodness, you get born as a demigod or something like that. Mode of passion, you're any mode.
Yes, yeah, thank you. Yeah, the as we were mentioning earlier, that the sinful or pious activity that one performs always brings results of parabdha and aparabdha, karma. And then what grows from that is the tendency, the kutta, to continue doing those activities, which, like you gave a detailed synopsis of, in the modes. Yes, goodness, passion, ignorance. obviously performing activities dominated by those modes, then you continue in those modes. Yes, and yeah, the deeper implication is the continuation of the cycle of birth and death. But yeah, thank you for that. Okay, we'll end here. Thank you for your kind attention. Grantarashima Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nittai ko.